This is Calvin Hammond in Studio 4 from the front line. In this last week, we've been subjected to mass media, 24/7, hyper-focus on a horrifying incident that happened in Minnesota, as I'm pretty sure you are aware. And it sparked widespread protests, riots, looting, which has followed in its wake. And many people are justifying it, saying it is completely necessary for the amount of damage to property, damage to life, damage to livelihood for an incident which we do agree is horrible. But what anytime the media focuses on one specific thing 24/7, what are they trying to hide? That's always the question we need to ask.
Well, yes, when you've got the power of the media, and let's face it, the media can inspire great concern for, say, victims after a tragedy. They can also pour fuel on the flames of discontent, and they can fan the flames of violence as well. And the facts are these: we've got riots reported, riots and looting and arson and destruction to property costing billions of dollars of damage, as if the lockdown for COVID-19 wasn't enough, destroying the livelihoods of vast amounts of people in 146 cities in America. Officially, over 146 cities devastated by violent riots. And where did all this come from? It cannot be just because people are angry over excessive police brutality in an incident which, let's face it, we don't know the facts. All we know is what the media has told us, the mass media, because we went there, we don't know the people involved. And as you know, it often can be, now, I'm not saying it's so in this case, the situation could be as reported, but you don't know, which is why sometimes you can have a person that you think is as guilty as hell, but when it comes to court and the first person speaks sounds right until another comes and cross-examines him, Book of Proverbs says. And so sometimes there's other facts that come to light. I can only think of, for example, the Rodney King riots, Los Angeles, 1992, when, because of a video clip that the media showed 24/7 for a week, I was in America during the time, and you couldn't but see it over and over and over. Four policemen knocking this man, Rodney King, to the ground over and over, and with their nightsticks, and it looked terrible. Until months later, at the court, they showed the whole video, which showed him attacking them, ignoring every attempt to try and restrain him, and the man was big, strong, and he was high on drugs, and he was attacking the police, and plainly the police, when you looked at it in context, the whole thing, not just the edited version, you said, oh, okay, actually the police followed textbook rules, and they were, in fact, acquitted, and as a result of the evidence. But trial by media is a terrible thing. Meanwhile, hundreds of businesses had been looted and destroyed. Vast amounts of people had been killed, crippled, and injured, and many people bankrupted by riots that were meant to be in reaction to a police brutality incident, which in that case turned out to not be as simple. And Rodney King, within a few weeks of being released, he was in jail again over more crimes. He's a career criminal, not just a drug addict, but dealer, and the situation wasn't quite as the narrative had put. So we've always got to be concerned about a trial by media. We've always got to be concerned about the zoom lens of selective reporting, because as a missionary who spent 38 years serving persecuted churches around Africa, I'm aware of terrible atrocities that happen every day all over. There's horrible persecution of Christians in Red China, in the Muslim Middle East, in communist countries. We know that there's horrible things going on in the Congo, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Angola, and yet the media doesn't focus on them. But the persecution of Christians isn't quite that much of a concern. So I'm always asking, why did they choose this incident, and why this narrative? And are they being responsible, or are they actually irresponsibly fanning the flames and pouring gasoline on the fire?
What I'd like to know is all of this spontaneous when you look at the facts that 145 cities just over the past week in America, in counting, have been attacked, looted, and such, and you're having multiple situations and sources where there are piles of bricks left outside of certain buildings and certain
pallets
businesses.
Pallets of bricks, yes. Suddenly delivered.
And this raises the questions of Antifa, a private group of basically terrorists, although they would call themselves, I don't know, mercenaries for peace.
And yet, I think they've just been labeled a domestic terrorist organization.
Yeah, by America. But I would just like to know, is this has this not been planned? Is this not some? Is there not a bigger agenda behind this?
Oh, there must be, because as was said by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, if anything happens in politics, it happens because it was planned. Nothing happens in politics by accident. If it happens that way, you can be sure it was planned that way. Now, that's what Franklin Delano Roosevelt said. And he was actually, I'm sure, quoting from the British Prime Minister Disraeli, who in the previous century had said something similar, that nothing in politics happens by accident. I've organized marches to Parliament. In fact, I've organized scores of marches to Parliament. We've marched 30,000, 10,000, 20,000 to Parliament at different times. And let me tell you, those things don't happen by accident. And they take weeks to prepare and a lot of organization. You can't just organize. And of course, our protests are peaceful. We've never left litter. We haven't broken a glass, let alone a pane, or looted a shop. And so I'm deeply concerned, too, about when people refer to, listen to this quote from a press report. Protesters hurled rocks and Molotov cocktails at police in Philadelphia.
Protesters?
Protesters hurled rocks and Molotov cocktails. Now, wait a minute. I've been part of well over 100 protests. Everything from Save the Whales, the Dolphins, Penguins, anti-canned lion hunting, pro-life, anti-abortion. I've been involved in a lot of protests against legalized pornography and so on. We've never hurled Molotov cocktails or rocks. Protesters, by definition, are peaceful. And the moment you start causing damage to property and threatening lives and throwing Molotov cocktails are fuel bombs. They're like portable napalm hand grenades, in a sense, which the Finns designed to take out Russian tanks during the Winter War of 1940. That's what a Molotov cocktail is. Why would that be described as a protest? And so I must question the a journalistic integrity of those who describe violent rioters, arsonists, and looters as protesters.
What I'd like to know is the comparison and how incorrect the media can be when, prior to this, you would be arrested for surfing. You would be judged and hated by the media or even by the people around you for not wearing a mask or for going for a jog when you shouldn't, when now you are allowed to have hordes of people in confined spaces and there's no hate towards it. Suddenly the media just switches views.
Yes, isn't it interesting that not that long ago we had these people giving choruses of support to police enforcing a culture of compulsion and coercion, preventing you from walking a dog, walking or jogging without a mask, or on your own jogging around an empty field, for goodness sakes. How could this spread the disease to anyone? Or somebody being surfing. And we've had in South Africa, actually, these are a few old stats, but a few weeks ago, we had 45,000 people had been arrested for violating lockdown rules, mostly walking dogs, jogging or surfing or something like that.
Living normal life codes.
And some of them manhandled and abused, and some people beaten and abused in horrible ways. A young woman thrown into jail like their common criminal for a technical infringement of a meaningless law, which is going to do nothing to prevent the spread of this COVID-19 and so on. And so it does seem that sometimes, like with COVID-19, the cure is worse than the actual disease it's meant to be dealing with. And if these are protests and a reaction to injustice, there's many ways to deal with injustice. I've been a victim of injustice. I've been locked up, waterboarded, abused, tortured in communist prisons. Now, I didn't go out there and destroy anyone's homes. I wrote books. I had radio interviews. I produced video documentaries. I managed to mobilize support for persecuted Christians. There's a lot of things you can do, testify at events and conferences. But I didn't find the need ever, despite having witnessed horrific incidents such as the Rwandan genocide and the killing fields of Mozambique and the bombing and destruction of churches and the murder and massacre of people and mutilating of people, cutting off their hands and their arms and their legs in Sudan in the name of jihad. I haven't felt that I need to mobilize mobs to burn down homes and businesses and loot things. I've taken the trauma of these experiences and channeled it into books, radio programs, services, meetings, and events to mobilize something positive.
Something constructive.
Yes, to expose the evil and to help the victims. So right now, it seems, first of all, we need some honesty. And that is that if we are cheering police brutality and a culture of compulsion and coercion, wanting the police to enforce wearing of masks and stop people jogging and stop people walking their dogs and things like this, you can't suddenly start screaming that, well, the police are using excessive force here. Wait a minute, you've been urging the police to use excessive force over things that weren't a threat to life and property. Mm-hmm. But now it seems that while last week you could have been arrested for opening a business, now you don't get arrested for looting a business. So isn't this bizarre that you can have people throwing Molotov cocktails, burning out the police station in downtown Minnesota in Minneapolis?
Well, not even just the police station. Many of the fires spread to blocks of flats, places where people were staying, even businesses. Yes. And what I want to know,
yes,
who are you helping by looting a store like Gucci or Nike or the Apple store? What benefits are you going to do? If George Floyd was alive right now, would he be saying, no, good, I'm glad you guys are looting and destroying half of America just because of my death?
Yeah. And destroying, in many cases, the life savings and business commitment of small businesses, family-owned businesses, individual. Some people's lives have been destroyed. Here they were on lockdown for more than 2 months. And now some of these businesses just opened last week, and now they're looted or burned out, destroyed by arsonists and rioters. So this is grossly unjust. And obviously, two wrongs don't make a right, ever. But if there's an injustice, you don't solve the injustice by committing greater injustice. It's like if I say, there's a mosquito on your nose or fly in your hair, and I'm going to use a baseball bat to get rid of it. Or say, you know, I saw some cockroach in the house, so I burnt the house down. I hope you don't mind, to get rid of the cockroaches. The cure mustn't be worse than the disease. Just like the lockdown has destroyed more of the economy than the disease ever could, these riots and looting, which has cost billions of dollars of damage, even burning the beautiful historic St. John's Episcopal Church opposite Lafayette Park, facing the White House in Washington, D.C. What has this poor church got to do with it? In fact, what has almost anyone got to do with this who's been affected? So there's something radically wrong here, and it doesn't seem very spontaneous that you can suddenly have so many riots, so much violence and arson, and such dishonest reporting, calling it protests, and blaming it on one incident of evil, if it's as it's been reported. It certainly looks like excessive force, brutality, and I've seen there's been reports coming out that the man had other health compromising issues, and that his death isn't quite as simple as it's been put. But nevertheless, it, however evil that is, let the case be brought before the courts, let justice, due process of justice, go its way. But we can't have trial by media, and we cannot have mob violence in the streets, because, as has been well said, if there's no law, there's no opportunity. If there's no justice, there's no liberty. If there's no safety, there's no future.
Even, I guess this is a specific question that we can ask for now, is what causes police brutality? What do you think goes through the mind of these cops who have been trained and prepared to do their job, and yet we have multiple cases throughout history where they abuse their job, even specifically in South Africa? And this is one thing that I found interesting, is a lot of my friends on social media in South Africa, what happened in America happens here every day on the regular, and yet only when it happens in America, suddenly they want to spark up a flame to talk about it.
Yes, and of course, it probably happens in different cases. There was a case of a Somalian policeman in Minnesota who shot a 28-year-old woman entering her own home. He mistook her for a housebreaker, apparently, in her own home. And this policeman, he had no ill effects, no problems. He didn't go to jail, made no big thing. They didn't do race riots against Somalians or people of Somali extraction happened to be in Minnesota, because he shot an innocent person who was in no way doing anything wrong. And why did I choose one incident and not another? But bear in mind, first of all, that if we do not have strong evangelistic discipleship, Christian influence in society, it's God's law or chaos. And the Bible teaches that people are basically sinful. The average person, if you ask them, are you a good person, will say, yes, I'm a very good person. And the average person thinks they're good. But the Bible doesn't teach the goodness of man. The Bible teaches the depravity of man, which is why we need laws and checks and balances, and why we need decentralization. And it's very dangerous that we are in a society of intolerance right now, and of where they will scream hate speech at someone who says something you don't like, where there's such lack of tolerance for others, and seeking to use the police to enforce a culture of compulsion and coercion, to arrest people because they said something that you didn't like. Thought police, almost. Calling it a hate crime, well, now you need thought police. Sort of George Orwellian 1984. So we've got a society which has, in many cases, drifted far from its Christian foundations. And as George Washington, the founder of the United States of America, said, that without religion, morality is impossible. And that the American form of government can only work for a Christian and moral people. It's wholly inadequate for any other. And so when you undermine the family and you undermine Christianity and morality in society, and you take the Ten Commandments down out of the schoolroom, and you abolish prayer in the government schools, and you take the Bible out, and you bring in pornographic comprehensive sex education into the classroom, and you teach evolutionism, you came from nothing, you're going nowhere, life is meaningless, and it's from goo to the zoo to you, from mud to monkeys to man, and that there's no ultimate right or wrong, there's no God, there's no eternal judgment, there's no heaven or hell, and you have violent video games, angry rock music, and the whole society is being undermined, families are being broken up. Now, the police are brought up in the same society, and in many cases, policemen are sworn at, shouted at, spat at, provoked, abused, and so not in any way justifying if a policeman abuses his authority. He's got a position of authority, and he should be very careful and restrained and self-disciplined. But let's face it, let's not be fooled here. This isn't a problem of skin, this is a problem of sin. And it's not race that's the issue here as much as a lack of grace. We need the grace of God, we need the law of God, we need God's law, or we have chaos. And the Bible has warned us, Deuteronomy 28, there's blessings for obedience, there's curses for disobedience. Our society is in rebellion to God. And you just think of what Hollywood's doing, you think of the evil that is coursing through society, tolerating pornography, legalizing abortion, all this. I mean, just think of this one thing. George Floyd, who this is all about, if he had been murdered before he was born by abortion, most of these protesters would have applauded, supported, and even helped fund it. They had no problem with abortion, so it's not like they care about his right to life. Most of them don't even know him, didn't know him, and know nothing about him except what they're told the media. Why are they rioting? Well, there's also evil in people's hearts. I can score Gucci shoes. I can get Nike trainers. I can get an iPad. I can loot from the store. Or I can just destroy things and cause harm to other people. Many of the people, let's face it, are not motivated by altruistic concerns or love for this man that they
just
want
to jump on the bandwagon.
A lot of it is that, and it just shows again the danger of the mob. But in this, the media needs to ask, what's our role in this? Have we been giving perspective? Have we been giving balance? Have we been positive? Or have we been exploiting the situation, fanning the flames and pouring fuel on the fire? And it seems that this narrative of all white police are racist, all whites are racist, all whites are villains, all blacks are victims, this isn't true, this isn't fair, this isn't right. Is racial division the solution? And yet this narrative, they beat this drum over and over, and the result is how much destruction of vast amounts of cities, vast amounts of businesses. So yes, we've got to go back and say, listen, buddy, this is not about skin, this is all about sin.
Well, even on that question of skin, one person asked the question, if George Floyd was white, would the same reaction have occurred? And even on that, another question that I'd like to bring up is specifically on the media again. Not once in the past week since this George Floyd incident has the media brought anything up about coronavirus. And prior to this, you couldn't take two steps, or you couldn't log into any sort of social media account without hearing anything about coronavirus and how you're not allowed to have a certain opinion about it. This is the first case. Yes, in today's world, it's the first time that we have such a powerful media presence in light of a pandemic, but this is the first time we've had a case where we have coronavirus and you're not allowed to have negative views on it. You have Facebook posts deleted.
Thousands. Yes. Banned. Huge amounts of documentaries taken down. Scientists, medical professionals, epidemiologists and others, virologists giving expert opinions, and just deleted, banned, blocked. all the rest of it, and people threatened for trying to share it. Shocking. So the intolerance that is now tolerated and encouraged is shocking. And to think of the fact that you couldn't go out with members of your family for a walk in the park or hike in the mountains because of fear of spreading the coronavirus. You can get in a group of thousands and throw rocks and Molotov cocktails and burn everything down. And that's somehow understandable and to be tolerated.
Well, here's another question I'd like to ask, specifically with Donald Trump's initial tweet to the situation. If you loot, you get shot.
He said, if the looting continues, the shooting will start.
Yes, something along those lines. I want to know, what is your thought? A man who clearly has a lot of media presence and media attention, a man who influences most of the free world nowadays, do you think that was an effective tweet to put out? I think we can all understand what his reasoning was, but to put it in those type of words, is that effective?
Well, you've got to understand that hard laws make a better society. Soft judges make hardened criminals in many cases. And so, as the Bible says, the compassions of the wicked are cruel. And so many times you can say, shame, we mustn't use deadly force to stop these rioters. But what happens then? You've encouraged the rioters to get more violent, and more people get injured, killed, crippled, and more businesses get destroyed. Now, for centuries, it was understood that if there's looting, then the National Guard or police must start shooting. That was standard. This was, even when I was growing up, the only way they could deal with looting is they shot people who looted. And this was normal law for centuries. And that's before the media suddenly came in and started to focus on this one poor person. And it would seem that the police never shot the looter or the rioter. It was always some poor innocent person minding his own business.
Standing there doing nothing.
Exactly. So, you know, the police ignore all the looting and terrorism going on, and they target this poor mind your own business guy who's such a lovely person and so on.
And the comment that I get from a lot of people my age is, no, all of the protests started as peaceful, and then the police started shooting, and that's the only reason why there's rioting.
Well, actually, it would probably be the other way around, because if the police had shot at protesters, the protest would have ended. Now, I'm not for shooting protesters ever, because protests are peaceful and we've got a right to protest and disagree. But the very people who are doing these don't believe in opposite opinions. They want them banned as hate speech and want those people vaporized and put down the memory hole, a la George Orwell 1984, for having another opinion, because they want hate speech laws to muzzle you. But bear this in mind, that the only way to deal with a mob is with actually force, because unfortunately, just to quote Napoleon,
what does Napoleon feel about this?
The Emperor Napoleon stood and was a witness to the storming of the palace of King Louis the 16th and Queen Mary Antoinette, where they massacred the entire palace guard, who were all Swiss soldiers protecting the Queen, and they all died to the man, but not a French soldier was mobilized, and he thought, what a fool the king was for not ordering his soldiers to open fire on the mob. In fact, he said, the only way you can deal with a mob is with a whiff of grape shot. Now, that's like cannon filled with a whole lot of small balls, so it's like a shotgun effect. But and he became the Emperor of France because when he faced an unruly mob, he did what he had decided back when he witnessed this in 1791. He gave them a whiff of grape shot. He turned the artillery cannons on the mob. And there was never another riot under his rule because, you know, now, of course, that's harsh, but...
And a lot of people could see it as a dictator-type move, but...
It was, but...
It got the message across.
The trouble is, if you are afraid to shoot some ringleader violent rioters, the result will be vastly more damage and loss to life by tolerating it. So it's horrible. It's like... my mother, with her gangrene in her leg, circulation problems, at one point they wanted to amputate the toe, and then it was the foot, and then it was the leg below the knee, and in the end it was the leg above the knee, because she didn't want her leg amputated. Of course, who wants a leg amputated? But she was dying from lack of circulation to smoking related, and so her foot was going gangrenous, and in the end the whole body leg was, and if it hadn't been amputated above the knee, she would have died from this gangrene. Now, who wants amputation? Amputation is a horrible thing. And as the son who had to authorize the amputation of my mother's leg above the knee. I was grieved, but one of the hardest decisions I've had to make. But it saved her life, not just for time, but for eternity, because and just going, she came to the Lord afterwards.
And just going back to the example of Napoleon, before any of you start thinking that, no, that's ridiculous to think that it's a good idea to shoot the crowd. Remember, he was talking about protesters. I mean, no, sorry, not protesters, rioting.
Violent mob.
Peaceful protesting, we condone it.
Dad said, we do it.
You're allowed to. You have the right to do that. But if you are doing it in a rioting manner, at the cost of other people's livelihoods, their businesses, their jobs, their safety, you need to ask the questions. And another thing,
it gets out of hand. There's an accelerating motion. So again, as with gangrene, the sooner you deal with it, the less damage done. Mm. But the more you leave it, the worse it's going to be. Same with a wildfire. If you can not stop the fire in the one room, it's going to endanger the whole house.
Yeah, you don't say, oh, no shame, poor fire. Just stay relaxed or something like that. But this is even another example I'd like to give. And this is specifically for the people my age and the very liberal-minded people of my age in South Africa. And that's a lot of people are saying that, like, how dare the police try and do anything towards the protesters. You must remind yourself, what is the job of police or law enforcement? Yes, many of them abuse their jobs and they don't do their jobs correctly, but what is their duty?
Primarily to protect lives and property.
Exactly.
And in fact, notice the very same people who said that you should not have any weapons, mm-hmm. because the police will protect you. Those same police have been ordered to stand down, to do nothing, to stand back, while the businesses, which represent lifetime savings, sometimes generations of investment from families to build up this business, destroyed in an evening or an afternoon, or as one person said, in 20 minutes, rioters had destroyed their entire life's work. And this is tragic. Now, the whole purpose of the police is to protect lives and property, to enforce the law. And yet, in 2020, we've gotten so confused that we think the police's primary job is to arrest joggers and surfers and people not wearing masks and people walking their dogs. But they're not meant to protect lives and property from violent Molotov cocktail and rock-throwing rioters and arsonists and domestic terrorists, to quote the American president. And now you phone the police for help, and downtown Minnesota police chief said he ordered his police to evacuate the police station, evacuate the area, because he said, the safety of my police officer is my primary concern. But that's not true. The safety of the citizens who pay their salaries job. Is their primary concern. Yep. I've been a fireman. We were put into dangerous situations. We had to run into burning buildings to rescue people. The protection and safety of firemen was not the primary concern of the fire chief. His primary concern was the safety of the people, and we risked life and limb in order to rescue lives and property that we had to go out to. And same when you're in the army. You know, you can't have a commander saying, well, my primary concern is the protection of my soldiers. Not true. They put us in the line of fire, in a place of danger, in harm's way, to protect the country or to fight the enemies of the country. Same with doctors and nurses. If the doctors and nurses want to be safe, they'd stay at home. They wouldn't go into the ER room and do a whole lot of the things, especially with contagious patients. Imagine if the doctor says, well, we won't be dealing with any infectious disease because the safety of our doctors and nurses is our primary concern. So all those people who said, well, we're depending on the police to protect us, it turns out that when it comes to the forces of disorder going chaotic and destroying things, the police withdraw and you're on your own. And if mm-hmm. you thought, I don't need to worry about my own protection, the government's going to look after me. Well, it turns out that when it comes down to us, when the rubber meets the road, you're on your own.
And this is a comment that you made earlier, but I'd just like to bring it up again for this specific situation, is the inconsistency in terms of requests that people and media feel towards the police. Like you said earlier, they were cheering when the police were arresting people surfing on their own, causing zero harm, and going for walks in the park or not wearing a mask in the mall. And yet when you have a situation, and yes, specifically with George Floyd, there was a lot of misunderstanding, but when you have the police doing their job in certain circumstances, you applaud it. And when you have it doing in other circumstances, you don't applaud it. What is their job? They're in and they're out. You look at the duty that they have, and they must follow that duty through. That's their job. That's what you pay them for.
Yes, protect lives and property, enforce the law. And I think when people have gotten into confusion, where they think now that the police's job is to arrest and harass and abuse people who say things I don't like or don't agree with, or because they're not wearing a mask. Well, honestly, if a mask protects you, why do you care if other people are wearing a mask to protect them? I mean, why do they have to wear a mask if you're wearing your mask, if you think that makes such a big difference? And again, somebody walking on the other side of the street, nowhere near you, what's the problem? How are they a threat to you? How is some surfer on the beach going to endanger anybody? I mean, the dolphins aren't complaining. The seals aren't complaining. It's you know, it's their territory. And now you've got scenes of police running along the beach to try and catch surfers. Got the Coast Guard called out and helicopters coming in to harass some surfers, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't surf, so I'm not here dealing with my own issues. But I think we should be able to think outside the box and question why. Why the inconsistency? Why the double standards? Why the selective focus? Why are we to agitate and riot over this issue but ignore all those other issues?
And what are we being distracted from? The selective lens of the media. And I know I've said it already, but I just found it so interesting that how nonstop media coverage and mental thought process over coronavirus suddenly was eradicated, suddenly disappeared in American media within hours.
The most important thing for several months, and suddenly it doesn't matter.
Yep.
Because now it's fine to be in a mob of thousands of people throwing rocks and burning things because they've got a good reason. But there was nothing that could justify you opening your business last week, or you walking your dog or going for a jog or surf or hiking up the mountain.
How dare you sell something that isn't an essential item?
And who decides what's an essential item? It's essential for the person wanting to buy it and the person wanting to sell it and whose business depends on it. So I think this is a great example of missing the big picture. And for me, this has been very useful exercise because as a missionary, I've been away sometimes 4 or 5 months at a time and no access to telephone, media, news at all. And so often coming back, I'd be intrigued to find, oh my, it looks like there's a lot of repetition. I didn't miss that much. But a lot of my friends who've been subject to this 24/7 media narrative have, but this is the most important issue in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm coming back and I'm saying, well, I've just come back from villages in New Mountains where they've been bombed and scorched earth. And
no one talks about crucified. That. No one brings that up.
But that's super important for the folks there. But obviously, it's not relevant to somebody who's looking at the Clinton News Network, yep, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, reading Slime Magazine, Useless News and World Report, and observing what Newspeak and these other press media outlets have to say. And so we really need to think critically. And if you are living in countries like Syria or Congo, you're not actually concerned about these things. But can people see how we're being manipulated? We're being played.
We're being like sheep, just following.
Sheeple. Some people talk about.
This is a big question, probably the most important one here. What does the Bible teach on these matters, and what is a biblical due process that we can use in situations like this in terms of preparing ourselves, helping other people, being prepared for it in the future? And
yes,
yeah.
Well, of course, the Bible tells us, warns us, destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. That's Psalm 55, verse 11. And Isaiah 5, verse 20 to 24, gives a warning that I think all the lamestream media need to pay attention to. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who are wise in their own eyes, who acquit the guilty for a bribe but deny justice to the innocent, for they have rejected the law of the Lord Almighty. That's Isaiah 5, verse 20 to 24. Proverbs 24, verse 24 says, whoever says to the guilty, you are innocent, peoples will curse him and nations will denounce him. And we must be careful, first and foremost, that everyone must be regarded as innocent until proven guilty. Trial by media is not fair. You wouldn't want to be subject to trial by gossip, nor should you believe what's being said in other places. And if it's not your business, maybe you shouldn't be too quick to have a strong opinion. Because let's face it, I can't condemn someone I've never met. I don't know. And remember, the first to present his case seems right. But the book of Proverbs says, until another comes and cross-examines him. And so that's why anything. Doesn't matter if you are convinced this person is as guilty as anything. You don't have the right to take him and lynch him on the nearest tree branch. You've got to go through due process. You've got to give an opportunity for the accused to present his case. And sometimes it's prevented terrible miscarriages of justice when you find out, actually, we really had the wrong end of the stick. And we can get the wrong end of the stick. And remember, we're not just dealing here with human fallibility. We're dealing with a world where the Marxist agenda is real. And as the agenda form documents well, the issue is never the issue. The issue is the revolution. And there are people out there who are really trying to exploit gullible and well-meaning people on the ground with false information or misunderstandings and confuse, divide and conquer, corrupt and conquer. These are well-known strategies of evil people. And people have used, whether it's class or male versus female, feminism, workers versus employers, black versus white. There's different issues that are used at different times. But we need to recognize that there's a bigger picture, a wider picture. And if we took the wide-angle lens of context and understood how Marxists subvert societies and churches and how the news media can use propaganda to distort our perceptions and even change our behavior, we should be very concerned.
Yes, and just going back to your comments of understanding the situation and potentially going through it yourself. The people that are praising or saying that there's nothing wrong with the riots, what if that was your house or your business or your girlfriend's or family member's effect that it had upon? Would you be saying the exact same thing? If you, let's say you lied to me and I said, okay, you did an injustice to me, so I'm going to cut off your leg. I'm getting my point across that I'm upset at you for lying to me. Yes, but have I done it in a correct way? Have I gone overboard? We can all agree that me cutting your leg off just for lying to me is an unnecessary act. And yet here, the death of a man unnecessarily being justified in the sense of looting, burning over 145 different cities simultaneously.
Thousands of businesses devastated or looted.
What is the actual reality that you're trying to promote here?
Yeah, it's beyond shocking. So we need to be very, very careful to respect other people. And of course, in this, the analogy of cutting off someone's legs for lying about you, well, in this case, it's more like attacking his mother, his sister's grandmother, the neighbor, and somebody totally unrelated and shooting the dog. And what has that, any of that got to do with deal with the issue? And as the Bible says, the punishment should fit the crime. It needs to be balanced, needs to be appropriate, needs to be measured.
Due process of law.
Even when you are convinced of the guilt of the accused, you still give him the opportunity of defense, because who knows, you could be astounded. We've all seen court movies where the result was completely different than what you anticipated. And some of those are based on real life cases where, honestly, we can get it wrong. We can be deceived. We can be mistaken. And worse than that, we can be manipulated by people with malicious intentions for another end. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners have perhaps considered this, but 2020 is an election year in America. And election years are often quite volatile. We know in Africa, election years can be very brutal and violent. Just ask our friends in Zimbabwe. But we know about it in tier two. But in America, it is known that an incumbent up for re-election will lose if the economy is bad. If the economy is good, he'll win. And so this COVID-19 lockdown and these race riots are possibly intended by individuals behind the scenes to derail the incumbent President Donald Trump's opportunity to win this election and bring a Democratic candidate in power at the end of this year, beginning of next year. So one has to be suspicious, such as in 2008, when the Republicans were very strong, very strong. Democrats had been pretty much disgraced over the Clinton era and his crimes and corruptions. And suddenly, in October 2008, a few weeks before the election, November 2008, suddenly the October surprise, the whole economic meltdown where trillions were lost on the stock exchange, tens of millions of people lost their life savings, their jobs and their homes. And, of course, the economic collapse was so bad that it guaranteed that whoever was in opposition was going to come in.
And Obama came in. Which in this case was the Democrats. Yeah.
And Obama promised in his campaigns that they will deal with these bankers responsible for this. And in fact, as has been documented in the documentaries on all this, that and inside job being the best of it, that in fact the Obama administration was the most Wall Street dominated. He put the bankers, the very people responsible for the economic collapse of America in 2008, into the most responsible positions. There never was a more Wall Street banker-dominated government in America than Obama's one.
Yes, and that was a comment that a few people brought to my attention recently, was a lot of these protests are to distract people from a big occurrence that's happening in America, and that is Obamagate, and dealing with the situation that's been happening there with him being taken to court potentially.
Corruptions and so on, yes.
And I can definitely get behind that, especially as you said, it's in an election year, and there's even been sources and reason to suggest that the Democrats had a lot to do with funding and organizing the Antifa movement and the, as I said earlier, 145 cities simultaneously attacked over this incident.
Yes, again, I think on a practical, positive solution, forward-focused solutions side, is the benefit of decentralization, the disadvantage of centralization. The globalists, the New World Order socialists, Marxists and others, they want centralization, as in the pyramids of Egypt, as in Tower of Babel, as in Nineveh, where it's top-down. And you can see the globalists pushing one world government, one world religion, one world economic system, as Revelation 13 warns us about. And the European Union, the African Union, the United Nations, World Health Organization, these are examples of globalization, World Council of Churches and others. And the globalization, centralization, is actually very disastrous. Just look at this COVID-19 lockdown of 3.5 billion people worldwide, for example, unprecedented. And similarly with this police atrocity, where you've got these very centralized police departments where they've got, in some cases, far too much power, and the policeman who's dealing with you is not a neighbor or a member of your community.
Mm.
If you've got decentralization, the way things were for millenniums, where you elect your local sheriff, and he's your neighbor, and you know him. Just take where we lived. Our little suburb used to have its own police force. I knew the mayor. He went to our church. You knew where the town councillor stayed. You knew the local policeman. They're all part of your community. You're not going to get atrocities happening in a community where the policemen are hired, trained, answerable to the local community. So when the police are directly, like in Switzerland, total decentralization, atrocities and police brutality don't tend to happen that way. But in these mega cities, in these centralized, massive police precincts where they basically regard the local population as the threat and the problem, and it's a militarized police, and these sorts of top-down centralization, I don't know, I'm just following my orders time, that's when these things happen. So I think this should be another example of the importance of decentralization and local police forces answerable to the local municipality. You wouldn't get the same problems. Also, the police aren't going to abandon the municipality if it's their homes, their relatives, their friends, fellow church members, neighbors, homes and businesses about to be destroyed. It's only when, yeah, it's not mine, it doesn't affect me, I'm from over there. And so, again, where the police, just like in Minneapolis, just pulled out and allowed the rioters to destroy 270 businesses and even loot their own police station, that can only happen in a centralization situation. In a decentralized situation, the local people would not allow it, not in my neighborhood.
Yeah, and that was another interesting statistic that was brought up, was a lot of the people that were arrested in the different areas weren't from that state.
Yes.
They were from outside.
There were people who had flown in from Seattle who were involved in burning businesses and looting businesses in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And how does this come about? And this is where the long fingerprints and spider's web of Soros and Antifa and the globalists seem to come in. Plainly, there's more to the scene than is meeting the eye. And I would challenge the people involved in media, stop just repeating the mantra narrative that you're being told to chant. Let's do some real investigative reporting and find out what's the real news behind the news.
Yes. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, yes. If people want to go onto our Frontline Mission SA.org website, you'll see updates, videos, for example, on how Marxists subvert churches and society. So important that we understand the logic behind this. We've got leaflets on the heart and soul of Karl Marx and how the globalists are working these things, how to resist Babylon and the beast. So visit frontlinemissionsa.org website. You can also find us on the social media on Facebook and Vimeo, Sermon Audio, Visit, and you can email us at mission@frontline.org.za. We'll be putting out more on this in writing as well. So make sure you're on the mailing list for Frontline Fellowship. Email mission@frontline.org.za or visit www.frontlinemissionsa.org.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope that this podcast brought reality to your mind of the negative effects that the Zoom lens of the media can have on the world today.